This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's good to have you with us on this Friday.
I think we need hardened sights. We need to let people know, you come into our schools, you're going to be dead, and it's going to be fast.
How do we keep schools safe? The nation is asking that question after the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. Students are demanding to know directly from the adults who are supposed to protect them, from parents to police to politicians. Yesterday, we talked about guns and whether gun control measures could actually help protect schools and other places where innocent people gather. But how to fortify a school itself? President Trump has one answer.
I think a concealed permit for having teachers and letting people know that there are people in the building with gun. You won't have, in my opinion, you won't have these shootings because these people are cowards. They're not going to walk into a school if 20% of the teachers have guns. It may be 10% or maybe 40%.
Well, we want to begin today with a look at what we know about what works when schools have to protect themselves, what keeps students safe, and what can actually hurt them even more. Here to help is Rebecca Klein, education reporter at HuffPost and a former producer. Rebecca, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with some news from yesterday from Broward County. The armed sheriff's deputy assigned to protect Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School didn't enter the school during the assault, instead waited outside. This, Rebecca, appears to be a glaring failure in at least one line of defense.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the main reason that schools employ police officers, is to prevent against attacks like this. So it just really shows you can try and do everything and these things still might happen.
Well, let's talk about school resource officers. That's the euphemism often given to a cop who's assigned to a school. In the 2015-2016 school year, about three quarters of schools with 1,000 or more students had a police officer on duty at least most of the time. This is a fairly widespread practice. Has it been shown to be effective in preventing violence or making students safer?
So the jury is out on whether or not it prevents or stops school shootings. There isn't any research proving that it does so. The research shows that there are a few proven benefits. Schools that have employ school resource officers or cops are more likely to have emergency crisis plans in place. They're more likely to have someone regularly patrolling the building. But there's also a lot of ways, an abundance of evidence showing that in some ways cops might make school less safe for some students, particularly vulnerable students. Schools with cops are more likely to arrest students for low-level minor misbehavior, like disorderly conduct, like vandalism, things that maybe a principal or a teacher used to deal with, kids are now getting arrest records for. So the cost-benefit analysis is really questionable so far.
We're getting lots of suggestions from listeners. People have really responded to this, Rebecca. Here's one teacher from New York.
I am an eighth grade teacher on Long Island, and I would like to see steel screens on all of our windows so we can still have fresh air but be safe. And also, I believe that all meetings should take place outside of a school building. Nobody but students and teachers should be allowed in the building during the day.
Screens on windows, meetings outside of buildings, strict access, all suggests a very closed environment in the school. So what about what that would do to the culture of a school, but also, of course, safety?
One of the things that has been proven to deter school crime is to have a positive school climate where students feel safe and welcome, where parents are involved, and where it feels like a staple of the community that everyone is supporting them. And I think there is a lot to say for the fact that if you are closing your school off from the community, whether or not students can feel safe there or whether or not it will feel like an isolated, prison-like environment that they're not getting support they need from outside sources.
Well, let's hear from another teacher.
My name is Ken Ebert. I'm a teacher from Albany, New York. We live in a dangerous world, and we need to make our students aware of that and our teachers aware of that. Active shooter drills are important, but I'm not so sure that anything can really keep us safe other than vigilance.
Students at Stoneman Douglas had active shooter drills. How long have those been on the American scene, and what have they accomplished?
So American schools have long had types of drills. It's only in the past few decades that it's switched to active shooter drills. Active shooter drills won't prevent a shooter from coming in, but experts say that they tend to be effective in lowering the amount of carnage that takes place. It is a measure that experts certainly say need to be folded into any school's emergency crisis plan.
Well, Rebecca, one of the most high-profile and controversial policies on offer is arming teachers. President Trump is for it.
So let's say you had 20% of your teaching force, because that's pretty much the number. And you said it. An attack has lasted, on average, about 3 minutes. It takes 5 to 8 minutes for responders, for the police to come in. So the attack is over. If you had a teacher who was adept at firearms, they could very well end the attack very quickly.
Now, Rebecca, the president has also suggested that teachers could earn bonuses, more money for carrying concealed weapons in schools. Has this been tried anywhere? What do we know about whether this can really help?
So there are a few instances of districts scattered throughout the country. I can think of one off the top of my head in Texas where teachers are armed. And additionally, in some states, concealed carry states, there are teachers who carry weapons while at school. To my knowledge, there hasn't been any evidence of this ever having stopped an armed intruder. There are a few scattered instances of teachers accidentally shooting themselves when they're carrying a gun, or one instance in Pennsylvania a few years ago where a teacher left their gun in the bathroom, so a group of elementary school students found it. Luckily, no one was hurt. So this has happened. There are a lot of risks, clearly, and no indication that this would be an effective way of deterring school shootings.
Rebecca, can we talk about the downside risk of hardening schools across America? We talked about the difference between school violence and mass shooter events, which are rare. The impulse to protect a school, spend a lot of money and put up a lot of infrastructure to protect against a mass shooting is definitely understandable. Seems to me there might be a risk in thinking that this is something that has to be done in every school across America.
I think it's important to note that schools nowadays are pretty much more safe than they've ever been. The decline in school crime has mirrored the decline in crime nationally. So advocates talk a lot about the school-to-prison pipeline, that when you make schools feel like hardened institutions, that it will help push them out of school and into the criminal justice system. There's this thing called school push-out, that if you harden schools, there'll be more suspensions, more expulsions. If you treat students like criminals and make them feel like criminals, then they will follow suit.
Still, it is very, very hard to turn around and tell a parent, no, you have a statistical fallacy in your head. You don't really need to harden your school. That's a hard thing to try to tell somebody who's worried about the safety of their child.
These reactions are totally understandable. When something like as tragic as what happened, you want to feel like you're fixing it. You want to feel like you're taking action. And it certainly makes sense as a short-term solution, but experts really recommend thinking about this long-term.
Rebecca Klein, education reporter at HuffPost. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.